I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Cinemas podcast. This week we'll be discussing Marinada's critically acclaimed Tony Erdmann. I'm Sam Howlett and this week I'm joined by Helen.
Hello.
Harry.
Hello.
And Jake.
Hello.
I skipped surnames this week.
I got a first name. Come on. I've been from day one. I wanted that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So Tony Erdmann is a German-produced film and it's already rumoured to have a US remake on the way. Sorry.
You having trouble with that idea? That concept?
Yeah. I thought it was Tony Hardman, the film with Danny Dyer.
Tony Hardman. It's got a... There's rumour to have a US remake already in the pipeline. So my opening question for you guys this week is, which foreign language film, so which film not in the English language, would you like to see remade in English by a Hollywood production? Bearing in mind that I think we all agree that this is something that shouldn't always happen for every single foreign language film that's popular. But if it had to, which film would you like maybe to be given the chance to have its story being told by a more known actor and director and given a wider release? So let's start with Harry.
So, first of all, just quickly, I want to say that for the Tony Erdmann remake, which is going to happen at some point...
Yeah.
I'm thinking Claire Danes,
yeah,
and Mandy Patinkin as the dad.
Ooh,
the homeland coming together.
Yeah. That's great.
How great would that be? Yeah. He's already got the beard.
Yeah.
Can he do like Princess Bride costumes as some of the things that he dresses
up? Yeah, exactly.
As?
Make it meta.
Nice throwback. Yeah, exactly. So, so my film, I'd remake Leviathan, the Russian Oscar-winning. Best foreign language film from 2014, I think. And I'd remake it and I'd have the lead as Vince Vaughn. And hear me out, because I don't want this film to succeed. I think Leviathan should be left alone. Ironically, based on the actions of an American worker, and that's sort of where that story came from. Vince Vaughn, because he always, without doubt, slightly gets my hopes up. And then normally completely fails to deliver True Detective Season 2.
I'll defend him in that. I thought he was okay. And he's meant to be all right in Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, that's the exception.
And he's teaming up with Mel Gibson for his next film as well.
Well, they can do the Leviathan remake.
Yeah. I thought if you really want it to crash, you need Michael Bay's Leviathan with Vince Vaughn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, imagine trying to get the explosions into the sort of horrible scenes where they're drinking vodka all the time. I want it to fail. I know that's not really in the spirit of the question, but... I've said it now.
So but films are just better when they're in English, aren't they? So,
yeah. We want English, colour, 3D.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for with these.
Explosions.
Yes, please.
4DX Leviathan.
Yeah, and I want it to work on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Helen.
Goodnight, Mummy.
Mm. Which we did on the podcast.
Oh, I love Goodnight,
which
Mummy.
I'm still thinking about because it's so good.
Yeah.
It's just always in my mind.
You were always in my mind.
With that, with you, I should tell you now it's you singing it, that's often there. So remake with Ant and Dec as the twins.
Oh, I like the age difference.
And the fact that they're not twins.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
But they are, but they're still, they're playing young. Like they're playing
they're
it as
playing
if they
children.
Are. Are they sort of PJ and Duncan-esque, if you remember from Biker Grove? They had many hit singles.
They're younger than Biker Grove.
Yeah. They're playing the children.
Okay. Baker.
And they'll probably change their names to like Luke and
Deck.
Flash.
They're just really lazy.
Like, oh, you can be Deck. Oh, I can't bother.
But does Ant have to play Deck? And Deck plays Luke.
Yeah. And Joanna Lumley is the mum.
I'd watch that. I'd really enjoy that.
Maybe if we talk about it enough, this will end up on Saturday Night Takeaway as like a parody video from them.
I'm sure that hits their core demographic.
Yeah. Good Night Mummy is definitely well known enough for that to be funny for the general public. Yeah.
People would definitely get all the references.
Well, I mean, it's safe to say that Ant and Dec tune into this podcast.
This is Hello to Ant and Dec. Hello to Ant and Dec.
Do they still have to stand in the right position?
Always.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Maybe switch them up.
That would be so disorienting.
Like, really throw off with the audience.
Yeah.
Dec and Ant.
I don't know what's real anymore.
Oh, God. So you mean Luke and Dec?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
All right, Jake, top that.
I don't think I'll be able to. What I'm going to go for is we watched Francophonia a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Alexander Sokurov's film. And the film prior to that he's probably most well known for is Russian Ark, the Russian single take film that follows through kind of the 300 year history of St. Petersburg and the Hermitage Museum, which resides within it. And it's this tour guide taking us through the museum but also through the history of the country as well. I've kind of bent the rules slightly, but I want to steal that. And I want to take it to the Science Museum in London.
Mm-hmm.
And I want Brian Cox to tour it.
The world.
And we'll take Alfonso Cuarón.
Giant balls.
The one take wonder to direct it.
Hey. And he's got form with space, hasn't he? Because of gravity.
Exactly, yeah. So Alfonso Cuarón directing Brian Cox doing a one take tour of the Science Museum in London.
Pretty strong.
It's good.
I'd watch that.
Who are we?
Yeah.
Where do we all come from? Nailed that.
Yeah.
My choice would be, so the film came out in 2005 called The Beat That My Heart Skipped, directed by Jacques Audiard, who did A Prophet, Rust and Bone, Deepan, and it's about the son of a gangster who's sort of led a life of crime and violence and brutality, who really wants to be a piano player. So he takes up piano lessons. So, and there's a kind of sort of tension between learning the piano and then also trying to get away from his life as a criminal. I'd like to see that remade. I'd like to see it remade with Ben Whishaw, because I think it's a really good vehicle for him to really be pushed into the limelight even further. And I think it could be the kind of film that you'd get Oscar season, but maybe a Best Actor nomination.
He's got to have a big film coming up soon.
He's had sort of bit parts.
I know Paddington 2's coming out, but
that's his Oscar film.
Did I mention he'd be Paddington in this film?
No, he'd wear the Paddington outfit, but
right,
as himself.
Okay. And also Ant and Dec in this as well.
Pad and Dec.
I think I know who I'm voting for. It's gonna be
I
no
think
surprise.
It's
got to
be
Ant and Dec.
Ant and Dec. Good Night Mummy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good Night
Mummy.
Yeah. Well done,
I got
Helen.
A point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the points? Can we run down the points quickly?
I think that's Jenna, Ursi and Helen all got 1 point so far, none of us have any.
It is tight at the top.
Yeah.
And the bottom.
So Tony Erdmann made its debut at Cannes last year. It didn't quite win the top prize because that went to I, Daniel Blake. But I think Tony Erdmann was the real takeaway film from that year's festival. It's quickly become one of the most reviewed most well-reviewed films, I'd argue, of all time. I've seen nothing but 5 stars and high praise for this. It's also the most recent film to make it into the BBC's top 100 films of the 21st century when they did that last year.
So everyone really seems to love this film, and it has such a simple story. It's about Inez, who's initially shown to us as this kind of workaholic businesswoman, and she goes to visit her father, who hasn't seen her for a while, and he's the sort of real jolly practical joker type who kind of sees that she's not enjoying life in the way that he does. So when she goes back to work in Romania, he goes there to surprise her. And the film's essentially, that's the end of the plot, I'd say. The film just goes from there as this kind of father-daughter relationship. And of course, when she sort of tells him to go away, he comes back in the guise of Tony Erdmann, this fake character he's created, fake life coach, to kind of wean his way into her life and teach her how to have fun. So we have an interview with Tony Erdmann himself, Peter Simonishek. I met up with him in London a few weeks ago, so enjoy this. So we're delighted to be joined by Tony Erdmann himself, Peter Simonishek. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So since its debut at Cannes, Tony Erdmann has become this massive success. How did it come about for you? How did you come to be in this film?
So I got the script and they invited me for the casting.
Something like that?
Yeah, that was it, yes. And I went to the casting and there I met very nice colleagues, girls, that could be my daughter. Good, so. And I think about the fifth or the sixth was Sandra Hüller.
Okay.
And I was very, very glad that she became my daughter. And now I have the three sons in life, and now I have one more daughter in film.
Was it quite a long sort of audition process going through all these different actresses or screen tests and things like that?
Yes, a lot of them. And it... in a way, it was also a rehearsal for the film.
Okay.
Later on, we did 1 year casting. Every character she casted, even in Romania, went there and rehearsing, trying 2 weeks. I think I tried about 100 weeks.
Wow.
Yes, incredible, isn't it? No, we took the second one, but we tried 100.
Tony Erdmann, it's got quite a sort of simple, straightforward storyline, but what is it about the film that you think's really kind of resonated with people and make them love it so much?
I think the reason is that people would like to have such a lot of fantasy and love like this father has for his daughter. So he makes these crazy inventions for regain his daughter. He lost her because she got a job, very strange for him. He is an old 60, a man from the 68, you say, yeah? 68 with and the daughter, she is in a consulting company, and it's a hard job. She is completely different in her mind, and but she isn't completely different, but she has such a job where she has to fulfill some expectations. They are very, very strange for even for her, but she is a German girl. She tries to fulfill all this. You can imagine that she's not happy. And they don't come together. And he turns and he goes back to Germany. But he doesn't. It seems that he goes back. He changes completely his character, his outfit, and he comes back as a Tony Erdmann,
yeah.
And he disturbs her life.
Okay, in a positive way, though.
Yes, maybe in a positive way for the audience because it's funny,
yeah.
And maybe in a positive way for his daughter. She starts a little bit thinking about her situation and her job. They come together in a way.
Okay.
Again.
So I guess in that respect, then, you're essentially playing two characters. I mean, was that particularly challenging, playing this kind of a role within a role, like two people at the same time?
So the role or the character, I would say mainly is Winfried Conradi, because he is the teacher, and he is the character to play for me as an actor.
Yeah.
And then he changes this. Winfried Conradi changes to Tony Erdmann. But this is not really a challenge for an actor, because Winfried, he decides to do it in this way how he does. It could be also another way. So it was my decision too. I had to fulfill the lines and the situations. But how Winfried creates Tony, it was my own thing.
Okay, so would you say that then you you kind of helped in the script process in the way, in that sense, that like you influenced how the film turned out in terms of what Tony does and things like that?
No, it was what he does was in the script.
Okay,
but how he does
came
was
from you.
Yes, I would not say that everything. It was a thing together. Yeah, so.
Okay.
You start, and it was really a, for me it was a wonderful work together with Marinade, and so maybe I surprised her and she surprised me. This was a part of the work, to irritate each other and come to new situations. And
I mean, I've read some interviews with Marin where she said that Winfried is in part based on her father. I mean, was she very open about that with you? And what kind of things did she tell you about her father?
I was very greedy to see her father. Yeah.
Okay.
And I saw him, and I inhalated. I did him. So I was talking with him, and he is also in the film.
Okay. Yeah. Whereabouts is he in the film?
You saw him.
Whereabouts is he in the film?
He is Mr. Dudinger.
Okay.
You know Sue Dudinger? He is the director of the school where they say, "We are so sad that you leave us, Mr. Dudinger," the children with the
makeup.
With the makeup, yes.
Okay.
And then it's one shot on Mr. Dudinger. He's in the sofa, sitting with the Adidas shoes. And this is her father. He played Mr. Dudinger.
Okay, so he's a kind of an impression of him in a way?
Yeah, sure, I did. Yes, okay. He was also such a funny, and I think he has a big heart.
Yeah.
Because he has such a wonderful daughter. She's really, really great person.
Okay, so you definitely like
so very again. Talented and so so normal in the same way.
And the teeth same all time. Comes from him?
The teeth.
Yeah.
Yes, I think he showed it to his daughter when she was a small girl. When I read the script, you can imagine, my father is a dentist.
Mm.
Was a dentist.
Okay.
Yes, and I read the script, and I was not a dentist, but I had to learn, and I could make this. And at the actor school. The colleagues came and said, "Please, for me too, make it for me too." And I made a lot of such teeth for my colleagues at actor school. And then I read the script, and it's the character with these teeth. I thought, "Oh, maybe it's for me."
Perfect, meant to be. So there's a rumor that there's actually over 100 hours of footage that you made for the film. Is that true, that there was that much left?
Yes, there was a lot of takes.
Okay.
Incredibly. I think this kind of this way of shooting is only would not be possible 10 years earlier, because this material you would have used, it's nobody would.
So with all these different takes and over like 100 hours of footage, is there anything that didn't make it into the film that you wish had from memory?
Oh, no. No, there are some situations when I saw the first, the second time, I thought, oh, where is this? We did half the night, we made this cut. A lot of things are cut, yeah. But I think it's very, very, it's very well composed, the whole thing.
Sure.
Some people says it's too long, but I don't agree that. I think it's exactly that length that it needs, this film. In a good book or a good roman or essay or some, also in the famous biography of lives of famous men, that is that it's not always the highest level. There is also the normal day for day and boring times in between. You cannot over breath in. You have also let it go and breath out for
sure. Okay.
To breath in again. And this film, I think, for me, it's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like you know, Austrian Joseph II asked after a performance of Mozart's concert. A lot of notes, he said to Mozart. Mozart said, exactly as much as necessary. So yeah. I think it's exactly, okay. Had a good measure, this film, okay. A good timing.
And how is it as an actor when you're doing the same take over and over again? Does it feel natural or does it?
No, sometimes really, if to be honest, it's really boring sometimes.
Okay, yeah.
35 degrees in the car, and to start and to say close the windows, air condition out because of the sound. So and then you go 1 hour this and then turn it at the gas station and again back and back. So whew, yes.
Okay, and I guess that's quite different because you have you've been in theatre before and you've done things like that. I guess that's quite a different experience from. Film where
theater.
You're doing this, yeah, the same thing over and over
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I think that Marin took also, especially actors from theater because they are used to do it again and again and again.
So Marin has said that the film is slightly influenced by kind of like the sort of screwball comedies, like old school comedies. Did she get you to watch anything like that to influence your performance? Or
there was an American comedian. It's a comedian who has a special identity. You don't know. Who he is. Sometimes he is his invention.
Okay. Oh, is it Andy Kaufman.
Kaufman, yeah. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's incredible, but...
Okay, so that was one of the big influences.
Yes, she liked this Andy Kaufman, this duality in the person.
Yeah, okay. And I have to talk about the giant fluffy suit at the end. How did that come about, and what is that?
Oh, this is not so strange as it looks in the film, because in Romania this is a folkloristic costume, like we have in Austria with the Berchten, you know, at the end of the winter when they people. Try to throughout the winter and to welcome the spring, and then they have such masks and such with horns and ugly faces, and in Austria and in Romania this is the kukeri is I think is the plural kukeri, but the kuker, this is about 10 goats are fur. Yes, this is made from that, and it looks very nice, huh?
Yeah.
I think the poster.
Yeah, it's been
really
like the
very nice.
All the marketing and everything.
I like it so much. It's blonde hair and this. The, and what you cannot see on the poster is how it smells.
Oh really?
It smells horrible. If you wear it.
Goat flesh.
Yeah, really.
And you filmed in the summer. Right, I imagine that was quite uncomfortable wearing that in the summer.
Yes, it was. You're right.
Okay.
And doing not only once.
Obviously you had to do that many times as well.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you've really suffered for your art here.
So, but I was not alone, to be honest. Okay. Under this.
Oh, was there other people had to work? Yeah. Okay.
A second one, sir.
Okay.
We were two.
Okay. I was at the European Film Awards this year, and Tony Erdmann won everything. Everything was nominated for.
Not everything, but a lot, yes. That's,
congratulations.
Thank you.
The film's nominated for loads of awards at the moment, and there's a potential it might even be at the Oscars. I mean, what do you think of all these awards? And obviously,
I think I had the 6th of the August, I had my 70th birthday. Maybe that's the reason why.
Oh.
So now we did. I think we did a good film, and I'm very glad that some people, they share this opinion. Yeah, thank you. My English is horrible, but I had to.
Okay, so I've just got one final question for you, actually. There's talk that there might be an American remake of the film, of Tony Erdmann. If that rumor is true, I mean, what's your response to that?
I would buy a ticket.
Yeah? Okay. Is there anyone you'd like to see take on the role?
No. I would be jealous. But I would take a ticket, buy a ticket, and then I will decide. Maybe they are better.
The writer wrote, could be Bill Murray, .. Why? Question, end.
Excellent, right. Peter Simonyshek, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, and that was Peter Simonyshek there, Tony Erdmann. So, the bulk of the film, I think, is about the relationship between father and daughter, Winfred and Inez. So, Helen, do you want to talk about how you found the representation of the relationship between these two people?
It was so clever, and there's so many layers to it, which I really appreciated, and is important because it's quite a long film. What does it get in, like 240?
Yeah, 235.
Right. It's because talking about Hollywood remake and things, if you were going to do it really simply, it's like, she works too hard. Mm. He's really fun. Like, and then he comes in and he's going to put his teeth in and it's going to be a funny ride. Like,
is it a vampire film?
I was about to talk about layers, and I think that secretly he's a vampire, and that's what's going on there.
That's pretty obvious.
No, I think so.
It's all about subtext, guys.
There's so much more than that, because it's about this father-daughter relationship, and she's a businesswoman and she very much has her own life, and he's coming from a place of grief because his dog has died. And also, can I just say,
that broke my heart, by the way,
when the dog dies.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's not a spoiler, that's quite early on. But he is wonderful to play this, because he looks like the saddest man you've ever seen, just from the look of him. Like, he's brilliant. His shirt is, like, unbuttoned and his hair is a mess. And he's just so, if you just saw him, he just looked comically so sad. But then he has all this joy in his life that he kind of, he does all these silly things, and he's very much about the moment to moment. But because of that, he's completely lost any idea of, like, life has meaning in it. And that's where she comes in. And as much as she's serious, in quotes. She also has a life and she's busy, and I love the relationship between that, between he's not got a lot on and that's why he's there, and she's, that's why she's so frustrated with him, because he's like coming in like, just do this, just do that, and she's like, well, it doesn't work like that.
Well, he's always trying to cope with something. Like, his life is pretty much in tatters. So we learn very quickly that, like, he's been divorced from her mum. His dog dies. His mum's not very well at home. So, like, we have this picture of a man that should be broken. And, like, when you talk about it like that, this doesn't sound like a comedy film. And yet he is, as you said, he is so full of joy.
Yeah. Well, it's that classic excuse of using humour to, like, yeah, defend, yeah,
it
yourself.
Was, for me, it was like looking into the future. I'm going to start not buttoning my shirts up.
Well, finally. Not just unbuttoned it. I think it was like, that does that thing where you button the wrong button to the wrong roll and you're just uneven.
Yeah, I just love the fact that throughout the film, he doesn't care. He doesn't really, like, he cares what his daughter thinks, but not enough to stop doing these practical jokes.
Yeah.
But he doesn't care what anyone else thinks. And actually, you see that rewarded. There's that lovely scene where he goes to, are they Catholic or Christian of some sort? He goes to the people's houses and they invite him in. And suddenly, like, he's part of their friends and family and he's met them once. And I think he is massively rewarded. And he, while you know, isn't responsible, and she takes on all this responsibility for her own life, which makes sense because it's her life. He kind of shows her how to let go of some of that responsibility and how not to burden yourself with everything. Because if you try and please everyone, at some point you're going to let someone down, and that's what's brilliant. Because the simplicity of the film is it's a father and daughter relationship, but it has so much more than that. And I think that's credit to the length of the film, that it manages to keep you right there. In a sense, you're a film where not that much happens.
Yeah, and they never feel like they're not real. Like, you talk about Winfred as this kind of, he's a big, jolly, practical joker who loves life. I mean, that could very easily be a clown character, couldn't it?
Mm.
This real unrealistic sort of jokester. But I think I really feel like that person really exists in this film.
Well, he's in the interview, he said about Bill Murray playing that character, and actually, initially you kind of go, oh, maybe he's a bit jokey. But actually then you remember Bill Murray has done much more serious films and is a proper actor. And like, actually, when I was watching it, I made a note that it had sort of Lost in Translation elements about it. The sort of hotel feeling and the sort of older man, younger... I know they're father and daughter, so that's slightly different.
Yeah.
But
that disconnection
and being in a sort of foreign place. Because that's a really fascinating thing. While it is a sort of German comedy, it's set in... Is it...
Romania. Yeah.
So that creates its own interesting sort of language dynamic as well, which I think the film deals with really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also there's something else about the fact that they... So you said he's a... You said it earlier that he's a joker, she's a serious businesswoman. They're going to fix each other's lives. And it never really goes down that route of sort of pinpointing them or making judgments on them.
Mm.
What I think he does really well as a comedy character, what he does really well as a comedy character is it's the tiny things that he gets absolutely spot on. And so... when you watch the film, every time he shakes someone's hand, he always does something really stupid. So he either says, oh, your hand is full of moisturizer, and then rubs it on himself. Or he, he mocks. He says, whoa, you've got a firm grip, and like fakes being hurt.
Yeah.
He does that every time, and there's absolutely no reason for it whatsoever. But that's sort of the beauty of this really simple sort of physical comedy.
Mm. Well, I love with the character of Winfred constantly... not knowing, like, even though you're 99% sure, oh, that's him. Like, he plays it so well, and as a character, he's so within his own performance as Tony Erdman that for a while you're thinking, like, it's definitely her dad, but is it?
Well, it sets that up right at the beginning where there's a, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a sort of delivery guy that shows up, And that as an opening is just a
really funny. That took me ages.
Yeah, me too.
So funny. It's kind of irrelevant, but it massively says
no,
that.
It's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
It tells you everything you need to know.
But we won't tell you anymore. You have to watch it.
You were saying earlier, Jake, how she's never judged for being a serious businesswoman.
No, that's you mentioned, that's a huge trope that a lot of these things could fall into. Like, I think of like The Intern with Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway, and it's like it could so easily be that, and the older person's going to teach the young one how to live, you know. But she does work, and you can see that maybe she does work a bit too hard, and she is disconnected slightly from her family or friends, but it's not completely saying that's a bad thing. It is just saying you could take things a bit less seriously. But it's also saying to Winfred, you really should take things a bit more seriously as well.
And also to Winfred, and you need to get your own life as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's just stormed on, like, he's just taking all hers because his own one has collapsed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge flaw in a character. And yes, we like him because he's the one that's giving us the laughs. But I really liked her as well. It wasn't like, oh, look at her being serious again.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit she does with her toe.
Now, there's three of us here that have horrible toenails. Do you want to admit?
Well, more lack of toenail for me.
Lack of toenail.
We have history with toenail.
History, ingrown toenail. This is now the toenail podcast. Yeah.
I really felt for her.
I got that.
And she, you know, and she does this business meeting with a really painful thing. And I totally got that. Like, yeah, and that's her. That's like cramming a horrible injury into a stiletto shoe and carrying on.
Yeah.
I think often in films there's this kind of... the female businesswoman is often a negative character, and it's like she shouldn't really be a businesswoman. She should be doing something else because she's a woman. And this film totally avoids that.
Yeah. It never mentions her settling down and getting a family.
Absolutely.
The man of her dreams doesn't walk in because we don't live in that world anymore.
No.
Where, and thank goodness we don't. Where women are expected. Let's go back, everyone. Let's go back to the time. But we live in this fantastic world where we now finally have it on film where everyone is a 3D character rather than being this sort of weird 2D woman that's essentially just used to show how great men are and how you can get your own Prince Charming. Does that.
The men outside of Winfred
are awful.
They're so slimy and horrible. But they're not completely awful. You can see that there's some element of them trying.
They're real.
Like that, it's almost the Office-like in just how horrendous these business people are.
They absolutely nail the business. Haven't been in business myself. In business, they absolutely nail the sort of casual sexism that happens in offices. And they don't hammer a point about it, but it's definitely there the whole time.
Yeah, like she say that she doesn't have time to be a feminist.
Yeah, that's one of the lines in the film.
That made me so sad.
Yeah. She says, "I wouldn't be a feminist because then I wouldn't entertain people like you."
And he says, "Oh, that's good."
Yeah. But they start to take her seriously when she's with her dad. So when she's got a man...
Well, not even her dad.
It's Tony Erdman, the life coach.
When she has this guy with her, they suddenly invite her out. There's this awful bit where they invite her... Yeah, they invite him out for a drink.
And he doesn't want to go.
Well, he's been prepped by her. You mustn't come. And then she says, "Oh, no, he's tired, but I'll come." And they're like, "Oh, no, no, no." You know.
Yeah.
And but you're right, it's that casual sexism. It's nailed, but never hammered home.
Yeah. Mm.
But with all of this, I think the film maintains its status as a comedy throughout. I think it's really, really funny.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And for a near 3-hour German comedy, you wouldn't think that all the time.
I think that's why it's got so much praise. Because you just don't expect it. You don't expect a nearly 3-hour German comedy to be so funny.
And it's almost slapstick as well, like the handcuff scene.
Yeah.
For instance.
But it's not that it's just funny, it's compelling. Like the issue that we have with I don't know, like Judd Apatow films, is that there's a lot of jokes, but then they're just over 2 hours long, you think, God, and this is long as well. Mm. When something is an out and out comedy and it is a joke a minute, like you just, it's lethargic.
Yeah,
like,
you tire. Yeah.
Like you think I'm kind of done, and you don't get as like the rounded characters like that you do get with a film like this, and it slows down the amount of jokes and it slows down the pace of it, but it just rewards you in those moments, and those moments are more compelling, they've got more heart, and they're funny.
Well, I mean, I think it says that, you know, we all started this, our sort of points that we were getting across were about their relationships, were about, you know, the political message. They were all, we didn't all start this going, oh, it's so funny, that bit.
Mm.
But it is also hilarious. Yeah. Like, there's a French Fancy sex scene that will stay with me forever.
Yeah.
I don't like French Fancies, and I like them even less now. So that's good.
For me, just the reveal of Tony Erdmann is amazing.
Yeah.
One of the best character introductions ever for someone who isn't a real character.
Just exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just the way he just turns around and you just see it, and it's so perfect.
Yeah. And there's a whole 20-minute party that nears the end of the film, which is an incredible, excruciating, hilarious scene.
But it's like such a release.
Yeah.
What's so great about it. Like all of that stuff, I won't ruin it, but all of that stuff I was talking about her cramming her foot in her shoe and not taking her clothes off when she has sex and being aware of her shirt when she has something on it, that release at the end is amazing. And you realise that, like, that whole thing, they've been playing the long game on us. Like, and all those, like, business meetings, I sometimes found some of the scenes of business, I kind of thought, oh, this is quite long. Like, just where it's sort of a bit where it's just in moments, I've suddenly felt that. And then at the end, you're like, oh, this is why. Like, they've been playing me this whole time, and it's great. It's amazing. The end is amazing.
Yeah,
the end is amazing. I didn't see the end coming.
No.
At all.
Wait, what are you calling?
Well, the sort of the party scene, yeah, rather than right at the end.
Yeah.
But then the end is also amazing, and reminds me of Boyhood.
Yeah, yeah. In
I expected more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a quote from Boyhood. I'm not saying I expected more.
What of me?
I expected more from you, Helen. Sorry. Yeah.
Also, can I quickly say, there's a bit where she's trying to do her dress up and she can't do it, and then she uses a fork, and it blew my mind. And I have this theory that women's clothes, why are they making women's clothes? You need someone else to help you do the zip up. Do you ever have a clothing item that you need someone else to help you with?
Don't have pockets.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
Pockets,
tiny pockets.
So they sell more bags.
So if anyone tries to sell me a dress with a long zip, you need to sell me a fork with it.
This dress comes
with
a fork.
Like with a Boots meal deal?
Yeah.
Like, you get the fork there.
That's what I need, because I'm not buying anything that I can't put on by myself.
It's going to be on the way out the door at Topshop, that you have on the way out the door at Boots.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a tray of forks.
You're going to get home and be like, I forgot the fork. It's like, Helen, you've got a drawer full of it. What are you doing?
I'm not using my own cutlery.
And Harry, you wanted to talk about earlier how it was sort of the politics of the film, how they subtly are imbued into it.
Yeah, so they do it throughout, and there's never a point where anyone expresses a sort of wide political view or they talk about what they believe in. There are a couple of really nice sort of slight digs, and one of them I really enjoyed. There's a bit where, as Tony Erdmann, they go visit a sort of it's not a construction site, but some sort of like oil refinery or something like that. And her job is essentially
firing people.
Yeah, it's going to be firing people at some point, and it's just how you do it. And he says, "Oh, how can you do this?" And there's this man who's about to get fired, and she just has a go at him and sort of says, "With your green politics." And it's just this excellent moment where you go, all right, so there's tension about their politics as well. But it's really funny because she's just like, oh, with your green politics. And you're suddenly like, of course he's got green politics. Like, look at him. Everything screams that he's sort of really green and eco and everything.
And very quickly, before we get into spoiler territory, I just want to briefly mention the giant fursuit that's been on the front of the posters. This is called a Kukair. Guys, want to know what your reactions were when you first saw this? Jake called it a fur tree earlier.
No, I called it a tree bear.
Tree bear. That was it.
I just wrote massively, can we talk about the furry beast in the room? which I think pretty much sums it up. And
that's,
also,
that's you when you haven't shaved, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. That's me at the moment. I think what sums it up, and look out for this, is the scream from one of the characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to tell you who because I don't want to spoil it. But there's a scream, and it is one of the best screams I've ever heard. And that is way too difficult to say at this time in the morning.
I laughed out loud. It was wonderful. I almost don't want to talk about it because
I was surprised to see it because we saw this a bit earlier, this film, and I didn't know a huge amount about it, and I didn't know about the furry thing. And now it's now on all the posters, and
I'm
it's
sad
everywhere.
It's on the posters.
Yeah, and like I was a bit annoyed about that because watching it with no information, when that comes on screen, it was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Also, very quickly, I want to talk about Marinada because we don't talk a lot about a lot of films written and directed by women on the podcast, unfortunately, because there aren't many of them these days. But this is incredible that a female-directed film has had this reception, and I think it's really amazing.
Yeah, and that is why Cannes got it wrong, and this was a wonderful opportunity to give the best film to a female director rather than Ken Loach.
I agree.
Yeah,
I really hope that we do start seeing more female directors because, yeah, one of the films I really enjoyed last year, United Kingdom,
yeah,
directed by Amara Santi, and I think that was it's great filmmaking, so hopefully that starts to change because it would be nice to talk about not talk about female directors as being an exception, talk about it as just being, oh, this is the director and let's not mention the gender.
Exactly.
And hopefully we get to that point.
Exactly. Yeah. Can I also just say to anyone, I always feel like we should say that when we're talking about a subtitled film, like, don't let it put you off.
No.
Yeah.
Like, there's still so many people that say it puts them off, and I'm going to quote someone, I'm not going to say their name, but they said, oh, I just can't watch those subtitles films, I'm either looking at the font or I'm looking at the picture, but I can't look at both at the same time.
That's Sam, isn't it?
That's a horrible impression of Sam.
I really struggled with this film, guys.
Please don't let it put you off, you're missing out on so many good films.
I'm going to wait for the Bill Murray version.
And also, also it's
remake.
Also, the film is so physical at points, so that doesn't matter. And also, it does dip into English.
Harry, that is not the reason. The reason is it's perfectly fine to have fun.
Oh, God. Guys, just hold out. Just hold out. You'll get to the English bit. Yeah. It'll be fine.
Right, so we're now going to go into spoiler territory. So, there's not a lot to spoil about this film. I think we're just going to go into more detail about some of the later scenes. So let's talk about the naked party.
This was amazing, this scene. As you say, Helen, it was such a relief. And it wasn't like... This was a moment where you know that suddenly there's just a switch has gone in someone's head.
Yeah.
And it's not that they've broken, but it's just a release. And normally that moment would be like you get a big crash zoom and a light bulb and you'd see their face change. And it's like it's very clearly the same person. And it's not like there has been this big flick. It's just like she has just had enough. But it's still completely her, and it's not this different person.
It's such a good, and I think so there's a bit where she takes her knickers off just before she answers the door, and the guest who's already there does a little like which is just wonderful.
I love the naked party. I love how socially awkward everyone is,
yeah,
that people end up doing it.
Yeah.
I just love that people at some point go, well, everyone's doing it, so I'm gonna do it. And that's what you never get with Tony Erdman's character. You never feel like he's ever gonna...
He would never do that.
He would never conform to something unless he wanted to. While everyone else, these sort of business suit people, just it go into that.
Yeah.
Just being like, I've had a beer, so now I'm going to get naked.
And whilst this naked occurrence is happening, you have Tree Bear, Koo Care, just in the corner. And you're watching it, and you sometimes you forget that it's there as well.
Yeah.
And all that while you're thinking, right, if it's going to... Like, we can't see this thing's face. If it's going to be anyone, it's going to be her dad.
Well, you know it's him. I feel like...
His movement is
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much communication comes through this mad-looking thing that
right?
you can just tell by the body movement and her reaction towards it and its reaction to her that it like they both know. And this is what did disappoint me like later on when it takes its head off or gets help taking its head off and it's revealed to be Winfred.
That seems
like,
very funny though.
Like, yeah, that is funny, but I would rather have it left with the faith between them.
Mm.
That they like the communication and understanding is so profound between them that doesn't need to be shown. And like that was one thing in the film that did disappoint me, and that one moment in 2¾ hours says a lot.
Yeah. Does everyone feel like that when they hug me, by the way? Because that in my head, that's what it's like to hug me. But obviously, I've never hugged myself.
Only when you're naked.
I just want to
talk
about
at the moment.
At the very end, the last bit. I said it reminded me of Boyhood because the dad says, Winfrey says, it's just moment after moment, and you need to, you know, then they're gone, and he is a character that has so much grief going on in his life, and I just really like the fact that he goes to get a camera to mark that moment because she's put the teeth in. But then it goes,
yeah,
and that's how it ends, and I think that's such a beautiful end.
Yeah, the teeth has become a phenomenon, and he actually had them with him at the interview. You put them in.
You saw it live.
You saw the teeth live. Yeah. I really want to quickly talk about the scene, which was my favourite scene, where they're at the party and she sings "The Greatest Love" by Whitney Houston, because it really reminded me of the scene in Annalisa when Lisa sings "Girls Want to Have Fun."
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Wow, I did not make that connection.
Yeah. And also the scene... Oh, it's different.
Wait,
context.
You didn't just say that so you could do an impression, did you?
I'm not going to do it.
I'm not doing it.
Not
okay.
I'm not going to do it. Star, don't know.
And
there's a scene in Shame as well, the Steve McQueen film.
Yeah. I love Shame.
Yeah, Shame's
where
great.
Where Kerry Mulligan's character sings New York, New York. But
yeah.
I just love the fact that they show the whole song. It's not just like
yeah.
the opening,
yeah, yeah.
just a bit of it. Like showing the whole song. Really incredible, I think.
And the way she ends is great. I love how she just
yeah.
walks out.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we're going to do now our recommendations for you on Curzon Home Cinema. Helen, ladies first.
Victoria is on Curzon yep. Home Cinema. There's a feature on the website where you can search by country. So if you type in Berlin, that will come up.
Because Berlin is the country, yeah? Not Germany.
Berlin's a country.
Yeah. Berlin is a country.
I mean, in many ways, it was when it was split, but I'm not going to go into that.
Helen, what's the capital of Berlin?
Germany.
Harry.
So my recommendation is Captain Fantastic. It's exceptional. I think I just want to point out George Mackay, who plays the oldest son in it. I watched Pride the other day, and he's sort of the protagonist in that. He's exceptional as this sort of boy going between sort of boy and man and that. And I know Viggo Mortensen's got a lot of plaudits, but
yeah, I think there's a comparison here with Tony Urban with the father who's trying to do right
yeah,
by his
yeah,
kids,
exactly.
What he is staunchly believing in, which you do have to question throughout the film,
yeah.
No matter how romantic it might be.
Yeah, and you can listen back to the we did a podcast about
yeah,
him, with and Victoria as
and
well.
Victoria.
So yeah, definitely check
yeah.
out the podcast
and
if you haven't, if you want to get a flavour of what the film's like.
Oscar nomination for Viggo as well.
Yeah,
last week.
Thoroughly deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. Jake?
I'm going to go with The Childhood of a Leader, Brady Corbet's film, which I think is new on Curzon Home Cinema this week or last week. It's got this horrible kind of baroque score by Scott Walker, which just puts you tingle up your spine from the first moment, and it is just watching the childhood of a fascist leader of some kind and how what you can see in his childhood and his relationships with the adults in his childhood, how that transforms and distorts what this could be innocent youth into, like a Mussolini type. It's great, yeah. Great. It's nice. Horrible, but brilliant.
And my choice will be Love and Friendship, which we also did on the podcast many months ago now, because last week at the London Critics Circle Awards, Kate Beckinsale won Best British Actress and Tom Bennett won Best Supporting Actor, tied with Mahershala Ali. So really great to see this film, which I think sort of gone under the radar in the awards season and is quite underrated, see it finally get some plaudits, which is very nice.
I think critically it's done really well, but within sort of Academy circles and BAFTA and stuff.
It's kind of, it wasn't released at the right time for that, I suppose.
No, but Tom Bennett for supporting actor is...
Yeah, Tom Bennett.
He's exceptional.
Just brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. Do check out Tony Erdmann. It's really an incredible film, and you need to see what everyone's talking about. And as always, a big thank you to CSR for letting us use their studios. That's goodbye from Jake.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Harry.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next week.